Hi, this is Greg Dench. I'm talking today with Bruce Eckel. Among other things, Bruce is the author of Thinking in Java. He's based in Crested Butte, Colorado. The conversation today actually is going to focus on a couple of topics. I've noticed, Bruce, that you've been thinking about a lot of things that you describe as a mess. I noticed, for example, that you recently titled one of your blog entries, "The Web is a Mess."
Oh, yeah, the hybridizing Java one. Yes. No, but I had a subtitle that said, "The Web is a Mess." Yeah, that the hybridizing Java one generated more comments than anything I think I've done before.
One of your recurring themes is stuff that works and stuff that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I just find, and I think maybe this is something that happens when we're programmers. There's a certain mindset that says, if I can accomplish something, then it's not very hard. I don't know why that happens, but anyway, it's, and one of the things I've looked at more and more is the little hurdles that prevent us from accomplishing things. So, for example, the latency, like I've been using Gmail for over a year now. Really like it. It's really improved things. And yet I've started to notice the latency issues involved. It's virtually impossible to forget that you're on the web, because you, every once in a while, you'll do something and it says, wait, stop. I'm doing something now, or we're having network troubles or whatever. And I mean, I find this very interesting because, you know, Ajax is supposed to be this, life-changing experience that, you know, now everything is wonderful. Well, it's really just, okay, now we can finally do client-side programming, even though it's still using JavaScript, which is inconsistent across platforms, etc. But at least we can sort of do it. And now, this is from Google. This is all the really smart guys at Google. And this is the best we get. We're back to waiting for the computer as if I don't have, you know, all this horsepower in my machine. I'm sitting here waiting for this thing. And the real problem with that is that it throws you out of the flow. If your brain has to wait more than a second or two, you get thrown out of your flow of consciousness. And that's, you know, that's incredibly counterproductive. And so even though there are things that Google has done, which is really wonderful, and moved things forward, I mean, they've added these great features, like I've been using their notebook a lot lately, the latency issue is starting to really show up. And if this is the best we can do using Ajax, then, well, this is why I've been looking at other better technologies like Flex in particular, because I think it can give you a better user experience. And in fact, we're even planning a conference on rich internet applications, rich internet architecture and applications later on this summer up here in Crested Butte.
Do you see Flex as just a better way to do Ajax?
No, it's definitely more than that. I mean, I suppose you could look at it one way in that sense. I mean, because Ajax is designed to build, let's say, richer internet applications. Flex is really, it's, I think of it as a domain-specific language designed to build user experiences. And it works not just on the web, but they have this tool called Apollo that allows you to build desktop apps. And Flex also works, or I'm not sure how close that is, you know, it's either works now or within the 6 months, on mobile devices, which I believe will include the iPhone, which has notably excluded Java. Steve Jobs' famous comments that, you know, about negatory comment about Java. And one of the nice things about that is that it's the same language. You don't have subsets or different mindsets from one platform to another. So the reason, in fact, that's a good question, because it's one of the reasons that attracted me to it. I have been struggling with the user interface problem for many, many years. And I've always run into walls, and sometimes it's because somebody comes up with a solution that just works on one platform. Well, I mean, for example, Visual Basic, great solution. People have produced all kinds of applications without too much effort, solved their problems, etc. Pretty much only runs under Windows, although there's this Visual Basic for Java that Sun has been working on, which sounds kind of interesting. But I think the guy who was working on that, it might have even been Tor Norby. Anyway, he's working on the, he's managing the Ruby, JRuby project now. So I don't know if that, anyway, I haven't heard anything about it for a while. But my problem has been that the kind of stuff I do tends to be cross-platform. And so if I don't serve the Mac community or the Linux community, I get complaints. And I would just rather not to have any complaints about installation or whether a platform is supported or anything like that. And so that's the thing that really drew me to Flex initially.
And is it particularly in regard to user interface issues? You want to have a consistent interface no matter what platform
I do. And in particular, I don't want to have to learn... I don't have to learn yet another one to do this. I mean, ideally, I have a single mindset and it works. I mean, this is what Java was supposed to be able to do. In my case, the problem that I ran into with Java is that it didn't have good multimedia support. The Java Media Framework has languished forever. It's like, I don't know. The powers that be at Sun decided that it wasn't important or just lost interest in it or whatever. And so there's a lot of things that I would have done with Java if they had supported, for example, MP3 files, which there's still no support for it in the standard library, which means you take your chances. At least there are open source third-party things now, but you take your chances on whether those are actually going to work on your destination platform, whereas Flash tends to be more consistent that way. So I definitely have my fingers crossed on that. Plus, you know, in the end, you get the things that people create with Flash, because my belief in this is because the people who developed Flash said, okay, we're not building something that will also be able to create user interfaces. We're going at this user interface first. And so for the longest time, there was no real, you know, serious programming language you could use for it. And now we have Flex. It's so, you know, it's good for programmers too. But the quality of the user interfaces that you can create with it are, I mean, obviously very attractive to customers. And so it produces, I mean, you know, in the end, putting the bits on the screen is an awfully important part of the process, and that user experience is. So, anyway, I think it can be, there's a book that just came out, that at least I just got a box of these books because I wrote a foreword for it by I think the lead author is Yaakov Fain. Anyway, it's about basically combining Java and Flex. So I think this is going to be, this sort of hybridizing thing is going to become more common. At Java 1, there's going to be a session on the F3 programming language, which is apparently a language designed to create user interfaces. I mean, they're built on Swing, but it's the same attitude. Somebody said, we need to solve the user interface problem. Building applications with Swing is too hard. Let's create a language which makes it easy. And so, you know, that's a step in the right direction. And kind of in general, I think alternate languages on the JVM is where Java's, you know, major historical contribution will probably end up being.
So you don't really see it as strictly an either-or. It's either Ajax or Flex. It's Java or something else. You think there are going to be multiple platforms?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is the I still, like, my own site is still primarily just using HTML and CSS, and occasionally I do a little automation. In fact, I'm just writing this morning about how I got kind of drawn into Zope, which is this whole world of automation, and it's great for big complex sites, but it's taken me kind of years to disentangle myself from it, because I realize, oh, I'm not a big complex site. I'm something simple. And occasionally I need to do automation, and Zope is too much for me because it's its own different world. So I just need the basic tools to do automation. It's taken me years to come to this conclusion. I feel kind of stupid now. I feel like I could have been doing a lot faster if I had come to this realization sooner. But yeah, in fact, what my site will eventually be is a collection of small tools, just like Unix has preached for all these years. You know, you take these specialized tools and you pipe information through them, and you build an application very quickly that way. You know, we've known it since they invented Unix in the 70s, and it's just a hard lesson to take in.
So I guess in one sense, when you talked about the web being a mess, you were suggesting that there's much more complexity than there needs to be.
Yeah.
That certainly from the programmer's point of view, things are not as easy as they could be or should be.
Oh, totally. Well, in fact, I just posted something this morning. It's called The Second Half of Buy Now Buttons. And it's an example of that. If you want to be able to sell things off of your website, you can put a Buy Now button on it. That's all great. Both PayPal and Google Checkout have a little pages that you can go to, and you can enter a little bit of information and it'll generate a button for you. So that's terrific, but the problem with that is that it's only a partial solution. It's what they did is they addressed the point of greatest pain, which was simply to be able to say, okay, can you just do something so that somebody can send me money? But the other parts of greatest pain, which have not been addressed, are, okay, what happens when, well, two points I made here, which is the idea that the information is split. So some of the information I have to keep track of, and some of the information PayPal or Google Pages keeps track of, and I have to So if I'm just a website builder, I have to know how to capture this information. I will probably have to end up asking the customer multiple times what their name is, because I'll have to ask it, and then the checkout system will have to ask it, and you know, it becomes annoying. Or I have to figure out, do more sophisticated programming in order to make this call. Anyway, it's like you can do a buy now button, and then you've got all this other hassle to work with. So my first observation is, why can't I just store all of the customer information that I ever want on either PayPal or Google Checkout? Why can't I create the button and say, here are all the fields I want you to collect, and have it do it for me and have it store it there? Then your average web builder, who isn't maybe a programmer or not a very good programmer, can just say, all right, I'll put these fields in. They'll hold the information for me. If I need to go fetch the information, I'll just call them and get it. It's kind of a web service sort of thing. So, and the other issue is, I don't know if or when this transaction is completed. And so that requires a callback. It's because the web is asynchronous. It's because we are disconnected. And so I put a button there, somebody presses it and starts to go through the process, and when they finish, or if they finish, I don't know that it's happened, other than, okay, I get an email or something, which I can't automate very easily. So both of these systems have ways to do that, but the learning curve is just, it's just a step function. Suddenly, you know, you go from the simplicity of a buy now button to suddenly you have to know all this stuff. You have to have, your server has to support HTTPS. You have to do all this kind of stuff. So in this thing that I wrote this morning, I said, well, you know, we need some way to get at least a minor amount of safe information back to me, you know, so that I don't have to do all this stuff, so that it's maybe only slightly harder than putting a buy now button on my site. We need to do that, and I suggested some solutions for that. And because in a previous weblog entry, one of the Google guys had said, okay, well, what do you want? So this is my answer to that. But I mean, that's just one example, and I would say an essential example, because there's a lot of things that people have not been able to do because of the sudden difficulty of going from a buy now button to something more sophisticated than that.
Do you think the users' expectations are now warped by the inherent limitations of web browsers that they're more tolerant of these kind of limitations?
Well, I think, you know, we're able to do amazing things because of the web. For example, I live up here in this little town way out in the boonies. I mean, we're basically on the Continental Divide here. And it's very, you know, getting stuff up here, shopping and everything is a real problem. But with the web, regardless of all of the difficulties of using the web, I'm able to find and order just about anything. And so, the benefits are tremendous, but we're now, you know, supposedly we're in Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 and whatever, however you want to call it. I mean, basically, we're past the initial flush of isn't the web useful because I'm able to electronically send information back and forth. And now we're to the place where we're saying, well, okay, I'm over that. Now can we make this process work a little bit better? Can we improve the quality of my user experience so that I'm not, for example, waiting around while my program talks to the web? Isn't there some way to, we know about caching and we know about putting things in the background so that it isn't constantly intruding on my user experience. And so I think that's where we are now, and those are the kinds of things that I've been sort of looking forward to finding solutions for. But what happens, I think, is that we get a little bit complacent about various aspects of what we're doing, and so we stop trying to solve those problems, which is what I think is interesting about what Google is doing by introducing things like, this new notebook thing that they've added, which I've been using. Well, it's really just a kind of a to-do list. And as far as I can, I've been keeping a to-do list using a plain text editor for a long time. And this is a simple idea that they've implemented in a simple way, and you can use it for a lot of, they didn't call it a to-do list, they called it a notebook. So to imply that you could use it in a lot of different ways. But what's interesting is, why didn't Yahoo come up with that? I mean, they're, especially because they're now suffering trying to work with, compete with Google. Microsoft's got their own version of portals and all that. Why didn't they come up with it? And I think the problem is because we often don't go back and say, let's find some of the simple pain points that people have been experiencing and not, that haven't been solved and that we've been just kind of glossing over. I have this, as an analogy, when I edit book material or writing material, I find it extremely useful to go back and read it aloud, which is can be kind of a painful process. It's time consuming. It takes time and it can be a little painful. But what it does is it forces you to read every single word, and your brain tends to cover over a lot of stuff when you read it silently. And I think that's a lot of what happens with our programming experiences. When we're trying to develop solutions for people, everybody's keeping a to-do list. But it takes Google people to somehow say, hey, everybody needs a to-do list. Why don't we make one? Why didn't somebody do that before? So there's a lot of things like this in the programming world. You hear people who have been working with Swing And they say, well, you know, swing is easy. And, well, I don't particularly find it that easy. It's not Visual Basic in terms of being able to build applications. They're working on it. I mean, Matisse and things like F3, and, you know, all those things kind of improve it. But I think the thing that's been holding it back is people saying that it's easy when it isn't. And there's a lot of, I mean, web programming in general. I think one of the things that I meant when I said the web is a mess is that I have, so my monitor is, it's an NEC AccuSync, it's like a 20-inch monitor. Okay, so it has a particular resolution that it likes, and sometimes when I go to look at web pages, they're not readable. And, or at least not Firefox, typically, I have trouble with them. So sometimes things will be moved around and in the wrong place. And I pointed this out to the guy who does my book design, and he designs a lot of websites. And he goes, oh, well, your screen resolution is too high. Well, if I change my screen resolution, that's not optimal for that monitor. And I think there's got to be a lot of people out there with monitors that are this high. But my point is that I have a different experience depending on which browser I use and depending on what pages I look at. And that's not, I mean, that's still back in the dark ages of the web. It's true with CSS, too. I've discovered that, you know, I can write CSS that looks different on Firefox and Internet Explorer and probably the Mac browsers and everything. And that's not the way CSS was supposed to work. It was supposed to solve those problems. And I don't really care why it doesn't solve those problems, but I think I'm safe in pronouncing the web to be a very interesting mess. But when you're trying to get something done, it requires a lot of extra effort in order to worry about cross-platform issues, cross-browser issues, you know, all of these things which are really just, I mean, they're new problems that don't have interesting solutions. They're just annoying problems that cost you time and money. And that's, again, a reason why I've kind of been drawn to Flex, is because when you create a user interface, you don't have to go, oh no, is this going to look the same on these different platforms under these different browsers or whatever? You're done. You don't have to worry about whether the JavaScript you're writing is going to work across the different browsers at all.
Which is, I gather, much the same reason that tools like the Google Web Toolkit have caught on for people who, for one reason or another, are determined to do their coding in Java.
Well, the Google Web Toolkit is very interesting because, I mean, Ajax is what's basically is supposed to solve that problem. The fact that, you know, you use these standard libraries that somebody else has worked out all the details on, the cross-platform issues and everything, and you just call those libraries and it works. The interesting thing about the Google Web Toolkit, I think, is almost more in the fact that you're writing Java code, somewhat of a subset of Java code, as I understand it, but you're able to work. You're able to write it in the kind of high power Java environments like Eclipse or whatever, where you've got things like debuggers, you've got static type checking, you've got. So by the time it gets translated into JavaScript and run on your server, run on the client's browser, you have a much higher certainty of having it be bug-free. And that's, you know, I think the real benefit of the Google Web Toolkit. But in the end, as far as I can see, we're still pretty heavily harnessed by the limitations of, effectively, the limitations of JavaScript. And so having things happen in the background. So one of the things that Flex has is this, it's called Flex Data Services. And if you're running on a single server, which, you know, most, the vast majority of systems are, you can just use this for free. And what it does is it handles all the data transfer back and forth between your Flex app and your server, handles it kind of silently in the background, optimizing all of the connections and the transfer, and it even updates onto your Flex app Now, it isn't just you pushing data onto the server. It pushes data back onto your Flex app. But this is all transparent behind the scenes. And so, and you're not, you don't have to be an expert in this stuff. It just does it automatically. And, of course, that's one of the things that Ajax is supposed to do as well, is improve the data transfer. And it certainly has, and yet this latency issue that we see is very intrusive. It means that it's almost like we're back on ancient machines that take, well, actually my old CPM machine had better responsiveness than this, as long as it wasn't connected to the modem, but I mean it feels that way. It feels like we got these insanely powerful machines and then we're having to sit there waiting on them, and that's really a programming issue. You know, when I send an email, there's no particular reason why that shouldn't be cached and sent whenever, and there's no reason I should have to be sitting there waiting for the Gmail application to get through sending this before I can do something else. I think in their case, it's a lot to do with, you know, guaranteeing atomicity and all that kind of stuff. But still, I don't really care. I don't want, this is my time, and I don't want to, and my mental flow as well. And I don't want to be sitting there waiting because of somebody's programming model. And, you know, think about that. My frustration multiplied by however many millions of people. How much time and effort is this costing us?
So are you saying, Bruce, that it's not limitations of the tools or the platform so much as the underlying programming model?
Well, of course, that ends up with the tools as well. But, yeah, I think I guess the thing about Ajax is that it just, you know, we take the smartest guys, or let's say some of the smartest guys. I don't want to diss everybody else. But so we take some of the smartest guys, we collect them together, we call it Google, we say, hey, do the best you can using this relatively stone knife and bearskin technology, and this is what they come up with, and I'm sitting there waiting on it. If that's the best that can be done, I'm not the whole Ajax thing seems awfully limited to me if that's the best we can come up with. And I've seen amazing things done with it, but it also looks like it required a lot of programming. I've seen drawing tools and things that people have done with using Ajax, and it's like, wow, that's incredible that they can accomplish that given the tools that they have. And it's taken us this long. I mean, we've had JavaScript in browsers for a long time, and we finally kind of figured out how to use it, and we're seeing how limited it is. And so I don't want to be held back by that. That's my problem. And so that's why I'm finding a lot of these things frustrating. And a lot of it is just the whole latency issue. It should be done in the background. It shouldn't be making me wait. If it makes me wait, there should be a really good reason.
Thanks, Bruce. Let's continue this next week.